It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And looks like another week with Mike Ward on assignment. That assignment has something to do with deer hunting in the state of Kansas, but we'll get him back in soon and be talking about deer hunting on those shows. I don't have a ton to report from opening weekend of deer season because it was 80-something degrees out there. I heard a few people that had some decent hunts out there, but looking, it was not the best that way. But hope springs eternal. And we do have some good stuff on the long-term forecast. And that's exactly why when Mike's not in here and we do have some cold weather, and we have duck season have started, I bring in our friend Seth Maddox, who migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, also chief of wildlife. What else they got you doing now, too? Are you like a legislative liaison to the Goat Hill?
Everything, yeah.
You're doing everything. Seth, good to talk to you, man.
Good to see you as well. Happy to be here.
And but it is that time of year, man. It is. So this is our duck season show. Well, one of them, and a lot to talk about. You came on with us earlier in the year, and so I want to, I know everybody wants to talk about what's going on in Alabama now, and I do, but I want to set the stage for what we're looking, what we're expecting, what's to the north of us in this year's flight. Kind of, what did you see? What's up? What's down? Any bright spots?
Yeah, we just conducted our preseason aerial survey. A good number of ducks in North Alabama right now along the Tennessee River. That's good. As we spoke before, we get those early migrators that follow that diurnal migration pattern. The days get shorter, they're moving out ahead of the cold front. So what you really see is lots of gadwall, some ringnecks, a few mallards here and there, but mostly those early migrators. Some teal still hanging around a little bit, but a lot of those early migration species ahead of, most of the cold fronts, like you said, it's still pretty warm, but got some nice weather coming, hopefully.
And with the populations, what we're expecting, and I want to come right back to Alabama, but the overall, this year's flight, are we down, we up, or is there, pintails now?
Overall from the previous year, it's a negligible change, minus 1%, overall. The ponds were down about 20%. So, production may be a little less, but I think it caught back up as the summer progressed. But for the most part, most of the species look pretty good. We were down a little bit on green-winged teal, which is a big species down in your part of the state. They make up a pretty good percentage of the bag. But gadwalls are up this year. Most species are pretty level, I guess, overall.
Is there a way to look at this for, obviously as a scientist, biologist, you can do this, but are there areas that are gray duck number or gadwalls are up? Is it because their arrival time in the breeding areas, or is it that they use something a little different than maybe a green-winged teal would? You know what I'm saying? Can you look at it and say, okay, here's the reason why this duck was up and this species was down?
That's part of it. Yeah, sure. You could look at it that way for sure. And that's a good way, I think, to look at it. What we're really looking at is on this, the May survey is just a snapshot in time. So it only tells you what is there at the moment that plane is flying over and somebody's counting that bird. It doesn't really give you a full picture of everything. Now, it's a great tool to use as a long-term data set to look at the species, how the species are doing over a long term. We've been flying these surveys since the 1950s, and so it really just gives us a good long-term average of what the species are doing, whether it be up and down, up or down. And then over the long term, if they're trending one way or the other, up or down, it doesn't give you a really good projection for the upcoming year because you're flying that in May. before they start nesting and incubating, hatching out. And so you don't really have a good snapshot of what that looks like. And so, you know, at that time of year, depending on the pond count as well, you know, if it's like it was down this year, if we got a bunch of rain or snow melt after that, then that provides habitat that you didn't capture on that flight, and which is what happened this year. You know, we got there was pretty good rain and some snow melt after the flight, and so we think that that production's probably pretty good this year as far as the birds go, and the fall flight will be pretty good.
This is nerd stuff, though, for me. But, like, if you looked at this, you know, okay, you got the grid, you're flying for bay pond counts. Is there a certain kind of wetland that's going to be preferential to, let's just say, I mean, gray ducks or gadwalls versus green-winged teal? Is it, will they use the same kind of wetland or marsh system, or is there a difference between those two, like what they like?
No, they will for sure use the same, same pond system. More permanent weather or permanent ponds with some aquatic vegetation is, you know, preferential for those species. The species that is a little different, you know, pintails, they historically nested in the shortgrass prairies. And so a lot of that shortgrass prairie has been, turned into agricultural. And so that's why we speculate that pintails are down over the long term, is that a lot of their habitat's been wrecked by agriculture, especially, you know, the time they're nesting is the time they're coming in and preparing those fields for planting. And so that ruins a lot of nesting attempts for pintails. Whereas, you know, gadwalls, most of the diver species are nesting over water in vegetation. But, yeah, the other species nest in different types of habitat, so they're not as impacted by some of the agricultural practices or some of the drought tolerances that others have.
Okay, now here's the problem. I was going to wait till later on the show to talk pintails with you, but you just said that. You're talking about how their population's affected, but we got three pintails in the bag this year. What's up?
Yeah, so that's the Pacific Flyway pushed for that because they have a ton of pintails out there in, like, California, Washington, Oregon. You know, they're shooting their one pintail a day and not having an opportunity at other ducks because there's so many pintails flying around. And so what we think is happening is that there is an overabundance of males. So the male-female ratio is skewed towards males right now, and that we can allow hunters to harvest more birds and not impact the population by shooting them. And we all know from statistics that we are not, by setting bag limits and hunting these species, we're not having an impact on the population. What's driving population numbers is habitat.
Mm-hmm.
If the habitat's good or bad, that's whether you're going to have more birds or less birds. You know, hunting, you know, putting pressure on these birds is not driving the population numbers. And so it's kind of a experimental period on pintails nationwide. Some states chose not to take the three-bird bag, but most states did, because if you didn't take the three-bird bag, then we have no way to learn whether this is going to, what this is going to do in the future. So we need 3 years of a three-bird bag, and the population is going to drive that. These surveys are going to drive that, if we have enough to have a three-bird bag or not. But 3 years of three-bird bag, then reevaluate and see what that looks like. And then that would inform our decisions we make going forward, whether we can have more opportunity to take more pintails or not.
I hope it doesn't show that it's harming it, because, I mean, that's one of my favorite ducks to hunt, you know? I don't know, many people are not happy with a pintail.
Out there, you know, that's one of the easiest birds to tell between drake and hen.
Yeah.
So
yes.
if you can pick out the drakes, definitely pick out the drakes and try not to shoot the hens.
You know, and I don't know, how many hens, you know, I don't know if studies done on this, but I'm thinking over the years, 30, 40 years of hunting ducks, probably 40 years, that, I mean, yes, do hen pintails get killed when somebody's shooting at a drake and you get an errant pellet hit them. That has happened. But at the same time, you know, my fear too is like at a gray duck or a gadwall kind of marsh like we have here, people who hadn't been hunting a long time, if they're not with drakes, or just think they're a gadwall. You know, I think that gets them sometimes too. If they're in with drakes, it's obvious who's the drake and who's the hen. But if they're flying with gadwalls or by themselves, you know, I worry they get shot for that.
Yeah, but I mean, there's nothing illegal about shooting the hens. Let's just say that.
No, it's not illegal. It's just like we want to keep as many hens.
It's easy to tell the difference when they're together. Yeah. So.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying like a legality thing, but it's like I don't know anybody who has shot a hen pintail thinking it was a gray duck. You know, when they shot it and then said, "Oh, I'm happy I did that." You're like, "Dang it."
Sure.
You know,
yeah, sure.
I've done it before. Sure. You know, I've done it before, and it's been like, and it's dead now. There's my pintail, but gosh, I wish I wouldn't have killed a hen pintail. So,
right.
And we got just a second here before the break, but when we come back, I do want to talk about, you know, the flyover and what you're seeing in North Alabama, and kind of think about a situation too. I don't know. I mean, Mississippi's one. I'm just thinking about states that have the latitude that we do, where you're having to, you know, think about what ducks are doing on an area that is essentially the Tennessee border and an area that's down at the Gulf of Mexico. We'll put those fun questions to Seth Maddox when we continue right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward still on assignment. That's all right. We'll get him back in after the holidays. After just this weekend. And then next weekend we'll talk some deer hunting. Right now I got this guy all to myself, which is, he's probably like this Sullivan guy in the questions. He's a migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. Seth Maddox, our guest. You know, Seth, I said this before we went to the break, too. As doing that, I mean, the nature of the job, migratory birds, right? So they're moving through. But, and I'm old enough that I hunted Alabama when we had a split zone. You know, we used to have two different zones in the state. But you look at other states, and they'll have like a north zone, middle zone, southern zone. And they're not even, they don't have the latitude we do, right? And change. There's a big difference between, you know, the habitat and the latitude of shooting a duck south of the causeway and one that's right up on the Tennessee line.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. You know, if we weren't a state in the very far south, like, you know, butting up against the Gulf of Mexico, then, you know, we'd probably have zones, you know, latitudinal zones. But, you know, like they do that in the Midwest, and that really plays a big factor into it for them, because, you know, as birds move through, you know, they're really trying to take advantage of the peak migration. Whereas us being in the southern end of the migration pattern, you know, we can only go so far up against the end of the season regulations. You know, January 31st is the last day we could legally hunt per U.S. hunt regulations. And so every year when I set the season dates, I try to start on that January 31st. And maximize the number of weekends that we have, and then count backwards to get our start date. And so it doesn't really behoove us to have those latitudinal zones, because we're not going to get to hunt any later than what we already are.
Gotcha.
So what birds we get are going to be here.
Yeah, but we're talking about it right now, though. So, and we'll talk some about the flyover you kind of mentioned in the first segment, but numbers are looking good in North Alabama right now. Is that, I mean, pretty decent population?
For those early migrators, yes.
Okay. Situation down here is not the same, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so we got to, you know, first of all, y'all, you know, listening to North Alabama on the podcast, y'all please shoot, when you shoot the ducks, shoot them from north to south and push them down our way. But, I mean, you know, it's that thing that area, Tennessee River and all that, is, you know, I mean, same latitude. We're talking about Arkansas, North Mississippi and all that, where, you know, we're down here. I know you can argue that, I guess, Louisiana in the same situation, but They've had ducks for a while, but they got a lot of calendar ducks. I don't know. It's just, I just hope they get here sooner than later. You said the biggest motivator here is just weather.
Correct. Yeah, weather. And, you know, looking at the weather, you know, we're going to, you know, looking at the drought monitor right now, a lot of the Midwest is in a drought. Even the northern latitude states along the Great Lakes are in a drought. So, you know, that usually sets up for a pretty good year for us because there's just not a lot of water on the landscape. You know, you have a lot of sheet water on the landscape usually in the winter. And, you know, that could change real quick, you know, with rains coming across the U.S. But currently, you know, I mean, we're in a drought as well, but, you know, ducks are going to jump over those places where they can't find any water to loaf and feed in. I mean, they do dry fill feed up there, but they still need a place to loaf and roost in. So it could, I'm cautiously optimistic, I guess, that we will get some colder weather and that, you know, ducks will push further south this year or in further south in larger quantities this year. Just looking at the drought monitor and knowing the amount of water that's lacking on the landscape right now.
Yeah. I mean, this is something you and I've talked about before, and, as you know, all of us, whether we have them in our area or not, everybody loves to hunt a mallard, right? I mean, that's just, I mean, mallard's quintessential American duck. I know they're all over the planet, but I mean, for, you know, that's our duck,
yeah.
Mississippi flyway. And they're, the studies I look at, like as a, like a non-biologist, but like mallards are just going to go. I mean, some do just duck stuff and migrate like crazy, but if you look at where all the radio tag and all that, they don't go any dang further than they have to. I mean, it's just like they just
that's
don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, why would you if you?
Yeah, because you got to return to the breeding grounds, right? So why go further?
Right.
But what is the formula, man? Because not only is Seth a biologist, but he's one of us. He's a duck hunter. Like, what is that formula? Because you would think we get a big cold front. We're like, all right, mallards are coming. And some show up or don't show up. But the next front, then somehow they show up. Is it like freezing? Is it snowpack over dry fields? I mean, what is your research and or people you talk to? Is there any formula to that? Like, oh, if A plus B, this week we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of both. So it has to be that really that severe wet severity index. And, you know, it needs to be really cold temperatures so that the water freezes. You know, you have ice on the landscape, and then across the open fields where there's still, you know, food for them to get at, then there needs to be snowpack on the ground so that covers that up. And so they can't A, loaf or roost in water, or B, find some food outside of the water. And so that those two combinations of that, you know, really drives them south. And it takes, you know, it's not just like it's coming, it's like it hits them. And you know, they may sit it out and wait it out for a few days, but if it continues, then they're pushing south.
Okay, your opinion as a hunter and your science here too. They migrate when, right? The old, they're coming, you know, growing up, the logic seemed to work for me when I was told. They said, well, they're going to come the next day after the front because you got the north wind. It makes it faster. And then sometimes I go, gosh, we're a day before the front and I'm seeing new ducks. You're feeling on that when they migrate. When do they push?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, ducks have their own personality as well. And, you know, there's been new research that came out and, you know, they use a variety of tactics. You know, some get up and push, you know, ride that front, you know, coming in, and some, you know, sit there and ride the storm out for a few days before they and decide, well, this is not good, so I need to get up and go. And it probably really depends on their fitness level. You know, if they've put a lot of fat on, if they got, you know, really good body condition, then they're probably more likely to sit there and wait it out. And that's probably more likely your adult birds, that are in good shape. If you have juvenile birds, those are the ones that are more likely not in as good of a body shape because they haven't had as much time to put that fat layer on and because they've been putting all their energy and stuff into growing, you know, that first year. And so, what we likely get, you know, ahead of the storm is a lot of juvenile birds. And then, you know, if it's a severe enough storm, then a few days later, then we probably get that push of adult birds.
That's interesting to think about. Like, okay, we're looking at a mass of birds. I don't know. We're in northern Missouri or something. Here comes the front. And as ducks pick up and start heading south, we could maybe ascertain with that the ducks picking up are the juvenile, the first of the year birds that are picking up and leaving the other ducks that they're all around them. They're leaving, even though not every duck's getting up. You know, it's not like they're just following everybody going. They themselves are getting up when the older birds are not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just like you're sitting there and you feel that, you know, they have this innate sense to read the barometer. You know, it's not in our brains, but they know something's changing and it's probably not good. And so in order for them to survive and carry on, their survival instinct kicks in and says, hey, I need to move, or it's not going to be good. So that's what's happening essentially.
You know, and talk about the dry situation to the north of us too can be, it's an interesting conversation. I mean, people have it where, like, if you hunt in ag regions, you hunt, you know, over Mississippi Delta, you know, whether you're in Mississippi or Arkansas or North Louisiana, areas that aren't marsh dependent. I mean, they have breaks and all that, but where there's a lot of pump water, it's this whole thing that, hey, you know, that drought, you pump up water, it's going to be worth it. You're going to whack them. But over the years, when I would hunt that stuff, you'd have a good hunt or two, but then you'd lose the ducks, I guess, because they had no other place to go to. You know, that maybe that'll
push them. Right, and what's driving that is just hunting pressure right there. Like, if you're one of the only areas in the region that has water, you know, they all come to you at first because they see water, and then you start putting that hunting pressure on them. They're not going to hang around to get shot at. I mean, that survival kicks in, and so they're going to find somewhere, you know, some hidey hole somewhere on a, you know, a refuge or some unhunted place that they're going to go sit and loaf. They're going to find somewhere that's not, you know, they're not getting shot at. So it's a good and bad thing to have water. But, you know, when there's a drought and you're the only one that has water in the area or one of the few that has water in the area, you really got to watch your hunting pressure during that time because you can really put really hurt your chances of being able to continue to hunt if you put too much pressure on the birds.
Yeah, I mean, that's something like that. Decades ago when I first started leaving hunting around here as a kid, grew up hunting in the Delta, we could argue, you know, we maybe get into the pressure in the Delta, but if those ducks, there was somewhere else for those ducks to go. And I realize we're also at the bottom of the flyway, but you shoot them here, they go over there where you've got that ag stuff where it's pumped up. If, you know, if everybody who's paid money to pump up water has a blind and people in it, maybe that could, you know, and I guess those, I mean, those ducks, I guess, could go back north, but I would imagine maybe they just push on further south.
Yeah, south or east or west. A lot of them, you know, move east to west and, you know, find a place at that same latitude, you know. So a lot of them will come over Alabama and potentially move, you know, back west towards Mississippi, Louisiana, Arkansas.
Oh, listen, the east-west thing, I hadn't seen it this year, but there's, I think, most years I'll be standing out in the yard at the house there at the farm and, you know, you hear, you're sitting there going, did I just hear snow goose or did I just hear speckled bellies? And you look up and there'll be a couple skeins of geese. Usually when I see them, they're heading to the southwest. They're heading towards Louisiana. But I was like, they get blown off track here or what? I mean, just, you know, something to see. I don't really see them ever sitting down much around us, but they sure do migrate over us. Are those birds coming from the Atlantic Flyway or what do you think's going on with that?
No, I think they're getting... they're getting pushed by a front, you know, and they're riding. They, you know, geese usually ride a front, and so as that front comes from west to east across the U.S., then they're just being pushed over. And you see that, you know, every other year, every couple of years, you'll see them. Yeah, I hear them. And you go out at night, you'll hear them. You know, during the moonlight, migrating over, and then the next day or 2 days later, you'll see them migrating back the opposite way from which they came because they're lost for sure. Very few sit down in Alabama. They know where they want to be. From transmitter data, those speckled bellies, they go back to some pinpoint locations. You know, year after year, they have some with transmitters on that are going back to basically the same acre they got banded on a few years later.
So, isn't that crazy?
They're very site-specific, for sure.
We're coming right back. More with Seth Maddox right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here this week. And always great to talk about, talk ducks and migratory birds in general. Talk doves with them too. Seth Maddox from the state of Alabama. And we may get to doves, but I'm stuck on this duck thing here. So the flyovers were pretty decent for North Alabama. Not that way for South Alabama. How do conditions look down here once they get here? Like, do you ever assess that in your flyovers, like feed and those kind of situation with aquatic vegetation? And what do we look like we've laid out for?
Yeah, I mean, we look at some of that stuff. I think overall it's pretty good. I don't think with being in a drought this year, you know, no hurricanes to speak of in the Gulf this year. You know, we didn't really have the impact where it had an impact on the aquatic vegetation down there in the Delta. So in my opinion, you know, it should have been a pretty good year for aquatic vegetation. There should be plenty of it down there. And I was on the flight, so I can't say for 100% for sure, but in my opinion, based on the conditions, it should be a pretty good year for aquatic vegetation down there. So by the time when the birds get there, there should be plenty to eat for sure.
Now, yeah, and another thing that came up, you mentioned we're talking about places to the north and other places with refuge and how, you know, in a marsh complex, there's more places to go than just where people had pumped up water. But let's talk about refuges and this that we put in place here in our area years ago. Is there any, I mean, I have my regular guy like riding I-10 or riding the causeway and looking at the ducks in there. But have y'all like done that scientifically to see, is a refuge helping? Do you see more ducks using it? Is there any kind of measurement to that?
Yeah, I mean, we do. There's been a lot of studies. You know, there's a big study going on in Tennessee right now looking at that. I can't say we've evaluated it in South Alabama yet because we were waiting on, you know, several years worth of data to be able to look at that stuff, and we just haven't done it yet. But definitely, you know, in North Alabama, we've had refuges in place since the 40s or 50s, and I can, you know, say definitively that if we didn't have those refuges there, that we would not have the number of birds in the area that we do now. It just provides that sanctuary to where they're not getting disturbed, where they can go rest and get some food. And, you know, as they're feeding throughout the year, they're eating the food out in the refuges, and they're more likely to make those exploratory flights in the general area to be able to and give hunters more opportunity as the season progresses. Now, early on, it probably is probably a hindrance to hunting opportunity because they're going to go key in on that place where they're not getting shot at, and there's plenty of food. But as the season progresses, you know, what that does is, you know, they eat that food out and make those exploratory flights to find new food. But if we didn't have refuges, we wouldn't have the number of birds that we hold in these areas because birds don't tolerate pressure very well. And so as they come to an area, you know, a new area, you know, obviously the juveniles, the young of the year, the first year birds are going to get shot first because they're naive to the area. You know, birds that have been to the area before kind of know where the safety is. But as that food, you know, in the safe area, you know, gets eaten up, then they're making those exploratory flights, and that's when they're starting to lose some opportunity in being safe, you know, allowing opportunity for hunters to get a shot at them.
It is interesting because, like, right off the bat, I mean, as – like, I have just my hunter's hat on, and then I'll put my conservationist hat on. My hunter's hat says, well, dang it, those ducks are all rafted up. I mean, there's a giant raft of them. They're going to pull everything in there, and they're not coming to where my blind is. But then if it does keep them around versus having them, I don't know, they used to go out in the middle of the bay, or I guess they, you know, sometimes I just looked at the way they were going. I wondered how many of our ducks picked up and went to southeast Louisiana, you know, when there's tons of pressure. So keeping them around longer, it's good. I just need, you know, I just need to be also kill them. You know,
I mean, it keeps them around, but also as the new flights of birds come in, you know, they see those rafts of birds and they're thinking, yeah, there's food, there's safety here, so let's stay here rather than overfly this place, you know, and go somewhere else. So it attracts more birds as well.
And you know, that was one of the things too. The changes. So I'm so old that I started hunting, you know, 3 and 30. Heck, I, you know, was hunting with lead when I started, but we had. You know, it was really almost mechanical. And this is not, I mean, I've owned air cool engines and all that, so there's not that kind of rant. But we had areas that, number one, that you couldn't get to on certain tides. Number two, scouting to us involved binoculars, because who wanted to go out try to push pole their way across the bay just to scout? You know, we didn't go in there. And it felt like there was almost a not defined inviolate refuge, but by conditions there were refuges, right? That ducks right. sat in places, because back here in the marsh we just couldn't get to them very easily, and that started changing. So I mean, I think it is worthwhile saying, hey, because they can't go sit on a, you know, where the water's 2 inches deep, because people can get to them now, they got to give them somewhere to sit.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons that we created that refuge down there between the causeway and the interstate, and is to provide that area, you know, that hunters couldn't run through and in an air-cooled engine. You know, as technology has progressed and changed, and we've gotten all this new toys, essentially, you know, it does put some extra pressure on the birds, and you know, it's not just hunting at that point. It's also just disturbance from, even if you dropped your boat in and, you know, just rode around scouting, not even hunting, you know, you can disturb birds that way by running through a group of birds and getting them to push up. And there's only so many times they're going to take that before they go find somewhere else to be. And so, yeah, that's why we created that area down there, is to try to provide some refuge, hold the birds in the area so that you can give hunters better opportunity. And so here we are, you know, a few years later, and so we still have to, you know, look at that data, but it seems to be, I think, you know, it helps. I know it helps in a lot of areas. It's, you know, it's not just the only area down there that has a refuge. We have refuges across the state, and then, you know, every other state has refuge areas as well. So it's kind of a proven commodity that, you know, refuges help hold birds in the area and provide more opportunities to hunters in the long term.
Yeah, you know, I've said this anecdotally over the years. If one person every, you know, 3 hours runs through a bay and kicks ducks up, I mean, they light back down. But the problem is, reality is, nobody knows that, you know, they're the 17th person to run through there, you know, run up those
exactly,
birds.
Yeah.
And like, one or two is cool.
I sit there and watch that happen a lot. You know, people don't realize that you're not the only person doing this. And, you know, the other reality is that we have more hunters now than we have ever had. Across the state, we're up probably 120% on the number of hunters. You know, 15, 20 years ago, we only had about 15 to 20,000 hunters. Now we have almost 40,000 hunters. So we've doubled in the last 15 or 20 years. And so there's just that many more people on the landscape, putting that much more pressure on the birds. So
isn't that kind of weird? I mean, as stories would come out, you know, America's losing its hunters and hunter numbers are down. And then those of us that duck hunted over the last 30, 40 years look around and say, not here. come look at the bird launch.
Exactly. For sure. Yeah, it's definitely a different trend than most hunting nationwide. It's even different in the Mississippi Flyway. You know, Alabama's, you know, one of the states that has had a huge increase in duck hunters across the board. And we measure that metric by our duck stamp sales, you know. We no longer have a physical stamp. You're not getting anything but something on your license that says duck stamp, and that allows you to hunt waterfowl. So there's no collectible aspect to it anymore. And so we determined that that's the number of people who are hunting ducks in the state, and it's been pushing 40,000 for the last couple of years. And so it's pretty interesting, you know, metric to look at. And you know, there's no really one reason why. There's no one, you know, smoking gun to point at that says this is the reason why we have more waterfowl hunters, because, you know, we're not getting more birds. You know, we're getting less birds because of the warmer temperatures over the last several years. But, you know, it's a younger man's game. A lot of younger kids getting mm-hmm. into it in their teens and 20s. And so it's a really cool thing to do. It's a really social aspect, too, I think, of it. That you can go out there and have a good time with your friends, and you don't have to. You're not stuck in one man blind by yourself, you know, with your thoughts. You can really, you know, move around, you know, talk, and have a good time with it. So I think that's probably if I had to put something to it, that would probably be the one thing. But you know, social media plays a big influence in it.
Sure.
You know, hunting media plays a big influence in it. But yeah, it's, and all the all the new gadgets and toys that keep coming out every year that people want and people buy. It's that all factors into why there's more hunters.
Yeah, well, I was supposed to age out of it, right? It was young man's game. I was supposed to age out of it. I just didn't get the memo, and here I am in my 50s still doing it.
Well, you're not out there dragging your boat around through the mud anymore.
Nope, I have for sure. You talk about gadgets, yeah, too. I mean, when new stuff comes along, I remember, you know, I tell a story. I remember the first time I had a robo-duck, and I was in a finger off Baymanette Basin, put it that way, not to wreck anybody's hunting spot. And I got the first ones that were like just a box, right? It was just like a remote control car box.
Yeah.
And it had had like all thread coming out of it, and you threaded the wings on there. And then you cut your own decoy and put it over the top of it. And I put it in, I had it on a piece of like a pipe conduit or something like that. And it was the damnedest thing I'd ever seen that first hunt. It was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it was something for a year or two. But it was like a lot of people say, well, this is going to be the death of duck hunting. And states have made regulations around it. I don't know. I think they've adapted to it. That's what I'm saying. When new technology comes out, and listen, I, being the old curmudgeon, I'll be like, well, that's the death of duck hunting. And it seems like the ducks figure out a way, you know, to overcome it.
Yeah, for sure. For most stuff, yeah, for sure. If they can get away from it, you know, you have enough adult birds that survive that have seen it before, and they're seeing it all the way down the flyway, because you know those northern states have been open for a month now, you know, for duck season. So they're seeing it as they migrate down. You know, they're overcoming that stuff. But some things they just can't. It just takes a little longer to overcome.
Coming right back, more with Seth Maddox, migratory bird coordinator, and a whole bunch of other stuff for the state of Alabama. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. By the way, happy belated Thanksgiving to y'all, and enjoying our conversation with migratory bird coordinator, also assistant chief and head bottle washer for state of Alabama, our buddy Seth Maddox, who I love too, because not only he's a biologist, but he's also a duck hunter as well. Like, what's your so we're gonna pick your brain here. Your favorite, you get one type of duck hunt in one area. What's your favorite thing to do?
You know, I grew up hunting North Alabama in those backwater sloughs of the Tennessee River, where you got a little bit of flooded timber, but a little bit of edge habitat. If I could, you know, I go back up there every year, and I do that, and it is nostalgic. You know, I love going out to Arkansas or Mississippi, you know, hunting the rice fields, hunting that flat stuff, but something about North Alabama just keeps calling me back, because you know, that's just where I grew up doing it, and, you know, it's in my blood, so... You know, that's, you know, like taking the boat out, getting the boat running, you know, getting that first cool ride, and then setting up your decoy, sitting on the edge of the bank, you know, brushing in a little bit, getting everything ready to go, and having those ducks come in. It's something that, you know, it's just experiencing every year for the last about 30 years of my life has been, you know, great.
So you go, you make that pilgrimage each year.
Oh, yeah, I go up there several times a year, but, yeah, I don't get to do it as much as I used to, because I used to live up there and used to do it a lot, you know, probably hunted 40, 50 days out of the 60-day season, but now I'm lucky enough to go maybe 10 or 15.
But it's great to know you do that pilgrimage. I've said this for years, that even when I'm hunting in other places and I get opportunities, I'm, you know, in Mississippi or Louisiana or Arkansas, I go do, because I guess I got I'm on a run from 1987 till now, hunting the Delta, that I just go, well, dang it. They're like, why are you going to do that? You need to go somewhere you kill some ducks. I'm like, yeah, but I have to check in at least once a year with hunting gray ducks.
You got to go relive it and see how things have changed and see what's going on. It's just, you can't get it out of your blood. And that's what a lot of people, you know, live on, is just the experiences from the past. And they think it should always be like that. But you know, things change over time, and unfortunately, you know, for the good or the bad, you know, things do change, and it's not always the same. So, but you know, there's still good times to be had.
Absolutely, I do love it. I do love it. I want to talk about the other. We kind of ignored this duck, and for a lot of people, this is duck hunting in Alabama to them, and that's wood ducks. Have any kind of idea on your flyovers? Wood duck populations are probably a little harder to to see than the other ducks.
Yeah, we really don't count hardly. We barely count any wood ducks on the popular on the aerial surveys just because they're in that scrub, woody, wetland habitat, and it's hard to count them and see them through treetops and button bush and stuff like that all the way to the water. But we utilize other metrics to keep an eye on the population for wood ducks, and that, we band those during the summertime and look at band returns. So that's how we kind of monitor wood duck populations. And they seem to be doing pretty good. We banded almost 1,000 of them this year, throughout the state, had good numbers, throughout the, we banded during, July and August into September. So really good numbers around the state that we were able to catch and put bands on. The drought has them more concentrated right now. So if you can find a place that has water, you can probably do pretty good. But, be careful with those areas as well, because it could be a roost area. You don't want to, bust that roost up. You really don't want to be hunting there, first thing in the morning or right at dusk. Because you'll really push them out of an area. You can put pressure on wood ducks that'll drive them to a different area. You want to be on the periphery of that, kind of away, find their migratory pattern of when they're leaving that roost in the morning or coming back to that roost in the evening, and, find a place along that route to be able to get your three limit.
Okay. And the last, just a couple minutes left, but the other species here, I got to ask you about. I'm knock on wood, they don't leave. I got permission on a place, a pond that's got a bunch of black-bellied whistling ducks, and I've never killed one, and I'm pretty excited. The fact that they didn't leave has surprised me. I mean, are we seeing some of that in the state?
We see a lot of them during the summertime for sure.
Oh yeah, I've seen them, but I thought they'd be gone. This guy, I'm like,
gone by the time the regular duck season opens, but. Yeah, you might get lucky. I mean, we get a few killed every year the first day or two of the season, but pretty much after that they're all gone. So, yeah, I would if you got a chance, I'd hit it as soon as you could.
Yeah, I mean, I kept checking with the guy. I'm like, they still there? He's like, yeah, they're still there. I'm like, they call him 2 days later. They still there? Yes, Sean, they're still there. I'm like, okay, I'm getting fired up about it. So it is interesting the number of states where it used to be kind of a Florida thing or South Texas, Louisiana, like. I hear reports from all over the Southeast, people seeing them.
Yeah, I mean, even all the way up into the Midwest and the Atlantic coast, I mean, they're showing up in weird, odd places and, nesting and reproducing. And so, yeah, their population is definitely expanding. They're taking advantage of, something on the landscape that they're utilizing. But in Louisiana, they're really hitting up, around the ports and everything, hitting those grain places. And they kind of hang around there, throughout the winter if they can. But a lot of them, migrate back to South Texas and into Mexico, Central America. So
and for everybody too, if you get a chance, they count just as like one of your six ducks. I mean, they're like a regular, like a gray duck.
Yeah, there's a six bird bag limit on them. There's no special lower limit bag limit, so you can kill six a day. Yeah.
Okay, that's gonna be my plan. I'll send you a picture if it works out.
Okay.
All right, and remind folks too, make sure they're legal, all that stuff for your licenses over at the website.
Yeah, outdooralabama.com. You can buy all your licenses there. We do have an app as well, the Outdoor Alabama app. You can buy your licenses there. You can check into your game check your deer and turkey. You can you check in and out of the WMAs. So all good stuff. Good luck to everybody this season.
Yeah, absolutely. You too, man. Seth, thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, we'll do it again next week for another FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.